But we do have a speaker tonight, as we said. We are a speaker meeting, and they're going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, their journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous, and let us know of any celebrations that they're kind of marking at the moment. I mean, I don't know. We'll wait and see. And I'm going to hand you over to the lovely Christine, who's going to introduce our speaker tonight. So, Christine, over to you.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Elaine, for asking me to introduce our speaker this evening. I'm really happy to do so. He came into our meetings during COVID, and he stayed. Obviously, we had a lot of visitors during COVID. People popped in and out, but they didn't all stay. And our speaker did. And I'm really pleased. And he wasn't here long before, I heard him share. I don't know if I'd heard him as a speaker at that point, but I heard him share in meetings. And I knew that he was involved in service. And I, at the time, was doing service at a meeting. And for various reasons, I was the only person left doing service there, and I've never liked that. I asked him if he was interested in a service position at that meeting, and we've been doing it together ever since with other people who've also joined the meeting. And I've never met I've ne Our speaker tonight is John. I've never met John, and the reality is, I'm probably never going to meet John in the flesh. But what I do know about him is that, and what I'm really happy at, what really helps me about John is when whatever's going on for him, and I know a little bit about what he deals with in his life, and I know it's not easy. And however difficult things might get, John is always very clear that he's always grateful for being clean. And I know that John spent some time in and out of the fellowship, and I did that myself. And I know how painful that is, and I'm really glad he's been around for a while now, and he'll tell you about that himself, maybe. And I'll shut up now and say, over to you, John. I'm really looking forward to hearing you. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. You've been a really important part of my recovery since I got to Higna. And I love this group. I started using 50 years ago, which is quite a weird number. And I was like 13 years old. Started using 50 years ago. Used for 30 years, and now I've been clean for 20. There was a point where I had a year clean and went back out, and then I was in and out for about 7 years. And that was at the latter part of those 30 years. And, sometimes I think about, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stay clean. And I'm not even sure if I wanted to stay clean. I was afraid to use at first because of repercussions from my using. Mostly I just wanted to stop hurting. And it took me a long time to figure out that A, abstaining from drugs, and B, having recovery. Could ease the conditions, could ease the pain I was in. And people would try to give me suggestions, or there's somebody who used to say, "You clean today? You're doing great." And I was always like, yeah, but I was just in so much pain, and I would say that, and they'd just say, "Keep coming, keep coming." I didn't really understand that either. There was a lot of things I heard during those years of relapse that, when I finally surrendered to the program, made a whole lot of sense to me. And the difference between my coming in and out of the program and my staying is absolutely because of surrender. And I don't know if I knew that's what I was doing at the time. But looking back, I can see that that was the difference. And I had a perfect sponsor at the time, who's still in my life, is a very special friend. I have another sponsor now that we both know. But my first sponsor, every time I brought up something about the program that bothered me, like, oh, I don't like the literature, or I'm not into this God business, or that one person at the meeting drives me crazy, whatever, whatever, whatever. And he would just say, do you think that's worth going back out over? Do you think that's worth leaving recovery over? And I could only say no to both of those questions. And he asked me those questions over and over. And I talked to him every day and just told him what was going on in my head, in my addict head. I didn't want to trust other people. I didn't like the idea that other people might know something that I don't know, might know more than me. God, imagine that. And I don't know, I just early on, like 20 years ago, maybe 19 years ago, I was getting a ride to a meeting from somebody, and I suddenly had this feeling like, if I just keep doing this stuff and being around these people and having a sponsor and working the steps, I'm gonna be okay. And that was huge because I don't know if I ever thought I was gonna be okay in my life. I certainly didn't feel that way as a child. I had bouts of serious depression all my life. I didn't feel okay. I felt like I was defective. I wasn't like other people. And yeah, so being okay is it's quite a thing. And I had trouble with the program, which wasn't really the program as much as my interpretation, but I would see self-pity, and I always hated that term, because of the depressions I went through. And I wasn't saying, oh, poor me. I was saying, I hurt. I hurt. And it was physical as well as mental. And I think a lot of times when I'd see the self-centeredness in the literature, I thought of it as self-pity. And was quite a lot of years later that I realized, oh, wait a minute, that's not self-pity. And then had the revelation, like, if all I think about and talk about is how depressed I am, that's entirely self-centered. It doesn't help me. It doesn't make me useful to other people. And, that was a revelation. And, I've got tools now to deal with depression. Recovery hasn't cured my depression, but I was in and out of psych wards for many years. I had a psychotic break when I was 19 years old. And I had a psychotic break at 5 years clean, 15 years ago. And since that time, I haven't been in a psych ward. I haven't, let alone had a psychotic break, but and I haven't had any depressions that lasted terribly long. And I have tools to deal with them. One of the things I don't do anymore is isolate. And I used to do that a lot. I used to just practically curl up in a fetal position and not leave my house and if I was depressed. And my times in and out of recovery, I would feel kind of isolated. I didn't know how to interact with people clean, and people would invite me to do things like go bowling or go and have coffee or something. And that was just weird to me. And more than that, I was like, well, everybody's really nice at the meeting, but then everyone just takes off, you know. And they were inviting me sometimes to do stuff. Sometimes they did go home, straight home, because they had lives, you know. But when I felt connected with people during my using days, I wanted to stay up all night and talk about life and how serious it was and how other people didn't get it and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, recovering addicts don't tend to stay up all night. So I finally started accepting invitations from people. Another big thing I started to do was, no matter how I felt, if the phone rang, I would answer it. Because for years, if I was depressed and the phone rang, I'd be like, I don't want to talk to anybody. Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I made connections with people in recovery just by doing that, just by answering the phone. And, you know, they got to know me better. And as I was clean for a while, I got to know them. And, you know, eventually, over a long period of time, we became peers. And I remember the first time this guy, who was a real, I always looked up to him as, you know, like he was on a pedestal, real embodiment of recovery. And we were chatting one night, and there was a meeting that he didn't always go to because he'd moved kind of far from the meeting. But we were talking, and I was like, God, you've been coming here for a long time. And he's like, yeah, so have you. We're peers. And I was like, peers? With him? How is that possible? You know, because I still felt like a newcomer. And when we were reading the literature, that whenever I saw a newcomer in the literature, I identified with it. And that was still going on at like 10 years clean. And I think it was because all those years where I fought recovery, I fought the program. I didn't allow myself to get any understanding of it. And that was really important for me to consider myself a newcomer. You know, I never, ever say, oh, I've got this down. And when I hear people say that, it scares me. Like, I hope they're going to stay. It's recovery, you know, it's an action word. You know, to me, it's not something you reach and then you're done, you know. It's ever evolving. And that's, you know, people who don't use are surprised, including a family member was, so you're still going to those meetings, huh? Well, you must really want to use all the time, huh? No. I don't even think about it much anymore. But I keep going because there's people I feel kinship with. And it helps me to deal with life, you know, find a new way of life. Have, you know, be reminded of spiritual principles that I can apply in my life. And I have a friend, I'm always nudging him to meetings. He's got a really, really busy life. And there's not as many in-person meetings here as they used to be. And when he hasn't gone for a meeting for a while, he'll say at the meeting, and he'll say when we're driving home, you know, I don't even think about this stuff when I don't go to meetings. You know, I don't think about humility and acceptance and compassion and all this stuff, you know, that helps me. And, you know, the whole thing about the newcomer is the most important person in the meeting. You know, if I feel that way, it helps me to stay clean. I have identification of how I felt when I came in. That helps me stay clean. I can feel compassion. That helps me stay clean. I feel empathy for the pain they're in. And it reminds me of the pain I used to be in as an active addict. And I can feel gratitude because of that. And all of those things help me stay clean. I was at a meeting recently. Somebody I didn't know was visiting from a little further away where I live, and talked about how this recovery, something to the effect, it wasn't just about survival. And immediately I was like, well, sometimes my recovery maybe is only about survival. You know, I'm not thrilled all the time. I'm not successful in every endeavor that I take on. You know, I've had friendships that didn't work out for various reasons. But I've been able to survive my mental health. I've been able to survive. It's incredible that I survived the behavior that I engaged in a lot of times using. You know, the fact that I've never gone to jail is pretty amazing. I've been locked up in a few police stations overnight. In one police station over several days, during which I detoxed. And it was a very old, by American standards, it was like a 200-year-old place, and it was like a dungeon. And they asked me if I was suicidal when I came in. And I was like, yeah, I'm fucking suicidal. And I thought they were going to take my belt and my shoelaces. And they took all my clothes. And they gave me a paper Johnny, as we call it here. It's like a paper equivalent of what they give you in the hospital, like the little gown that ties in the back. And before long, I was like rearranging the scraps of that paper, trying to stay warm. It was a very warm morning when I went in. There was all sorts of neighbors standing at their little picket fences watching, oh, what's going on here? And then after I was locked up, there was a freak blizzard. And my family, nobody could find a bail bondsman because of the blizzard. And I ended up in jail for 3.5 days. And that was awful. And I do not think I would do well in jail. I'm claustrophobic. I don't like to be around macho men. So survival is no small thing. And of course, survival too, that I'm still alive, which is another incredible thing. I had a very serious suicide attempt with what I thought was poison, and it did do a lot of damage internally, but I didn't die. And I was convinced I was going to die. You know, I'm so far away from that kind of thinking now. You know, like I said, 15 years of pretty good mental health. So anyways, what else was I going to talk about? It's been kind of a tough year. I've been feeling a lot of remorse about behavior I engaged in an act of addiction. And a lot of that stuff was buried. You know, it's probably part of the reason I used, though I didn't know it. I thought it was all about the pain people had inflicted on me, and, you know, came to realize in recovery that I inflicted a lot of pain on a lot of people. You know, and some really bad incidents. And I don't know if you can be a borderline sociopath or an intermittent sociopath, but Starting at the age of 14, there was behaviors I engaged in that were not kind, let us say. And that went on for a lot of years, and getting hit with that was difficult. A lot of it came flooding back when I was in between sponsors, and I was not equipped to cope with it. And I'm sure if I had a sponsor, I would have got through it without totally having a breakdown. And because I would have had a sponsor to express empathy and remind me about spiritual principles and have me do some writing, have me do some step work. So I did have an experience of knowing what recovery is like for me without a sponsor, and it's not something I would allow to happen again. And I trust my sponsor completely. He knows everything about my past. He's a very smart guy. I have to be careful I don't compare myself to him too much because he does a lot of really positive things for society in his life. He's active in a lot of stuff in the city where he lives. And I live in a small town by the ocean, and there's all sorts of hiking trails here. And I lived in the city for 20 years, and before that, taking vacations with my family. I just always love coming down here. It's a couple hours drive from where I lived, and it was an amazing thing to be able to come here. And it was the first time in my life where I really winged it, that I just kind of spontaneously decided, like, I'm going to see what happens. I found a job and found a place to stay. Actually, I kind of bounced around at the homes of people in recovery and eventually found a place. And that was all during that 1 year of recovery. And then I never thought I was going to use when I lived there, and I sure did. For another 7 years, and I'm amazed I survived that because every time I went back out, it got worse. I might have felt relief at first, but my behavior got worse. I hurt people worse, and I felt worse. And when I finally surrendered and got clean, a lot of things changed right away. That I didn't have the police in my life, and I haven't for 20 years. I haven't had an eviction notice pasted on my door in 20 years. I haven't been involved in any physical violence in 20 years. And, I'm. Every once in a while, I might say something hurtful, and I do promptly admit it. And I've become, reliable, which is a very hard thing to do if you're completely self-centered. And before recovery, I would make commitments to meet people or to help somebody with something, and I either wouldn't show up or I would show up late. And I had to learn to follow through on that stuff in recovery, be a responsible person and a helpful person. And again, doing those things strengthened my connections with people in recovery. I got all the active addicts out of my life 20 years ago, within the first year of my recovery. And I worked for a very emotionally, spiritually sick, angry person for a long time, and he was the last person that I. Well, that was festive. He wasn't addicted. His addiction didn't involve drugs or alcohol. It involved other stuff. But he was a very sick person, and I was making good money. And I remember talking to a friend of mine in recovery who had a lot of years, and she's like, I said, I don't know what to do. You know, it's unhealthy, blah, blah, blah. And she didn't tell me what to do. She just said, whatever you do, if you do decide to leave that job, think of it as a leap of faith. And that made a lot of sense to me. And I never made quite that much money again, but it didn't fucking matter. I had peace of mind. I ended up doing work that I loved, working for somebody I loved. Eventually, a friend of mine got brought on board, so we all worked together, and it was a great thing. But before that, I was at a meeting, and somebody I used with had called me at like 3 in the morning, and I had to get up at like 6 a.m. for work. And they called to tell me I was one of their favorite people ever, and they were calling me from the other side of the country. And I ended up getting in this conversation about addiction and recovery, and she was saying, you know, you're not really an addict, you're an alcoholic, or you know, all those people in 12-step programs are so self-righteous and da da da, all this kind of stuff. And I was like debating it with her, and I was at a meeting the next day, and I was talking about getting these kind of calls and stuff. And a woman in the meeting said, have you ever thought about getting an unlisted phone number? This is before cell phones. And I was like, that sounds pretty extreme. And I drove around the corner from the meeting, came to a cross street, and I was like, that's a really fucking good idea. And I did that because it's crazy to get into a debate with an active addict about what you're trying to do to save your life and to salvage what's left of it. And I had a friend for 35 years or something at the time who called me before I got an unlisted number. And he was very passive aggressive, very emotionally sick person. He could be very vindictive and mean, especially if somebody was down, including me. And he called and was asking how I was doing, and he was kind of, there was this hesitancy in his voice. And then he said, I can't believe what you said that night with that other guy was there, and da 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 da. And I was like, that was like 2 years ago, you know, and you two were ganging up on me verbally. So yeah, I said something wasn't nice, but you know what? I'm past it. And when I got off the phone, I realized it had been 6 years previously. And so I ended that friendship. And it was never a healthy friendship. It was always based around using. And I should wrap this up. I was going to say, you know, surrender brings me gratitude. And I thank Christine for her lovely introduction. And I realized years ago, and I say it a lot, but I don't have to be particularly happy at a given point in time to feel gratitude that I'm clean. Because I have absolute clarity, and I'm grateful for it, that if I used, everything would be worse. I would feel worse. I would behave worse. My life would get worse. So I have that gratitude because it's, you know, I'm not a God person, so I don't use the word miracle, but whatever. Call it incredibly good fortune that I'm clean and that I'm not in danger. And the other thing about, actually, I don't know how much else I have to say. You know, I think I talked about recovery giving me coping skills to deal with life, and my sponsor stresses the spiritual principles all the time, and that's been really valuable. And every time something difficult has come up, I've gotten in a dispute with somebody, whatever it might be, my sponsor will say, well, it's a good opportunity to exercise spiritual principles. I want to say fuck you, but he's right, and it does happen. And when I was in and out of the program, spirituality, I thought, well, that's pretty vague. What is that? Is that like, seemed like some sort of hippy dippy thing. I don't know. And then over the years, there's places in the literature where it rattles off a whole bunch of spiritual principles in a row, and there's nothing vague about them, and there's nothing religious about them. Compassion, empathy, trying to think of some of the other ones. Humility, which is, there's an end to self-centeredness there with humility. So anyways, the last thing I'll touch on is, I first came to Higna because I saw an illness and recovery meeting listed online, and my partner was battling cancer, and I thought, well, maybe this will be helpful to me, to hear about other people's experiences and stuff, and and the suggestions about dealing with illness. It says dealing with other people's illness, they don't want our pity or judgment. They want our support. I forget exactly the words. And I've been able to do that. And that's kind of how our relationship started, was that I didn't obsess and ask her questions all the time. Oh, how are you doing? Or this must be terrible. Because she was sick of people doing that. And she's an incredibly remarkable person. And she's defied the odds for 5 years now. She wasn't supposed to live to see 2020, and she's still with us. And there was a point recently, she's spending like 75% of her time in the hospital now, unfortunately, long extended periods, months. And for some reason, at some point, something triggered me. One of the times when she got out, and I started feeling like jealousy and suspicion, and those were emotions I dealt with over and over again in relationships. I was in a lot of relationships, sometimes overlapping over and over, and I was like, should I ask about this or talk about this? And then I finally realized, she's in the hospital. She's barely out. I don't know where she has the time to have an affair, but whatever. I was just like, it doesn't matter to me the definition of our relationship, whether, I'm a BFF or, whatever. I feel incredibly grateful that I get to help her in her journey, and that she wants to spend time with me and is relieved to spend time with me and talk to me. And the last thing is, I've always read to her, and somehow a while back I started making these recordings, reading from books, sort of like an audiobook, but sort of like an old-time radio show, and I work in all these sound effects. One of them, there was a 14-page chapter that had 60 sound effects. And it's a labor of love, and I enjoy it because it gives me a chance to be creative. But she's really relieved by it. It takes her out of the environment of the hospital and allows her to just like take a little trip, she's in recovery. I know that she wouldn't be alive without recovery. I know she wouldn't have the incredible attitude she has and the incredible sense of humor she has about everything. And she goes through torturous treatments over and over again. But recovery has given her a lot, and she's overcome a lot before she got the diagnosis. So I think I've said just about all I want to say, except that I love the Higna Fellowship. I'm so glad I found my way here. I'm so fond of so many people here, and it's also nice to hear new people coming in. We're getting new people at meetings fairly consistently. So I will leave it there. Thank you, Helene, for asking me to speak. And thank you all for being here.